This is Will's Band of the Week for May 22nd, 2017. Welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Barrett, live in studio.
Hello.
And our semi-annual guest, Chris, live in studio.
Semi-annual, yeah.
Seems like it.
Semi-coherent.
That is always true, yes. I won't contest that.
Which is a little jab to try to get you on the podcast a little bit more often. Just a little,
nudge. He's got his basketball coaching duties. Yeah, he's got his writing duties. And... you know,
I am. Yes, I'm a rock on tour.
Mm-hmm.
I have many, many things to do.
Barrett, did you see that video of Chris that's been going around? On, I think it's on, you know, various sites where he's coaching the fourth grade girls, and he makes one of them walk up to a chalkboard and write, "Winning isn't everything; it's the only thing."
Wow! I didn't see
it's
that.
It's kind of a little controversial.
Yeah, that's plagiarism.
I do the whole, and we get a seal here, and we get a seal here.
Yes.
What the hell's going on out there?
Yeah. See, all that stuff, I think you took that from a coach. I can't think of the guy's name.
Rick Pitino.
There it is. Yeah.
That's right. You know, you can't really say the same thing to your players that a different coach said, or you could get sued, right?
No, I think
I don't know.
If you're a baseball manager and you said go out there and throw strikes, do you think like George?
Oh
Bamberger,
yeah, I'd be like, oh yeah,
George Bamberger could probably sue you for.
Well, like he's dead.
Oh, that's right. Well, his heirs could sue.
Isn't
you.
He dead? I think he is dead.
George Bamberger.
I would bet he's passed on, but
yeah,
we should probably know that, shouldn't we? For all
well,
the
when
joy
somebody dies,
gets.
It doesn't mean you can plagiarize him, right? So his estate could still sue. Craig Counsell.
Wait. So I already have...
Or you, in this case.
I already have my new book, mm-hmm. Into the Printers. It's called The Sun Also Rises.
Hmm. So how did you spell saying, sun? As in like...
Yeah, it's just S-O-N.
I just, yeah. You know, I got inspiration from another writer, but he's dead. So, who cares, right?
You might get off on a technicality there.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
But that does sound familiar to me. I'll just Google that later.
It's about bullfighting and emptiness and drinking.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good combination.
People have never heard anything like it before, so I figured.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even if it
I
is.
I was never a big reader.
You know what? Now it's coming to me. That's Hemingway.
Wait.
But that was so long ago. Seriously, like nobody remembers that. That was like forever ago.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. It's pretty much, I think, the ideas, the name, everything taken wholesale from that. But again, you know, just.
I got like $1 million. Upfront cash payment for it.
Well, speaking of cash payments,
from a guy on State Street, he wrote me a check.
Nice.
We had to make an undisclosed cash payment to Chris this week so he'd come on the podcast and report on the death of the week. Barrett and I felt not sufficiently qualified, and we're not playing the jingle because it's too sad. So, Chris, take it away.
It is actually very sad, and it continues to make me sad. I know we do the jingle sometimes for deaths that, you know, when you feel like maybe a guy's lived his life, a full life, and, you know, done everything that he's going to do. But yeah, for Chris Cornell and finding out later that it's suicide, it's really depressing, especially for, you know, people of my age where, and I know everybody thinks, you know, the age that I was in college was last time real music was made or whatever. But, you know. The you know, Soundgarden in the early 90s during the grunge scene, you know, they were, you know, the third biggest band probably in the world, behind Nirvana and Pearl Jam. And you know, just the fact that he committed suicide, evidently, and his wife is contesting this, saying you know, it was the antidepressants that he was on that did it. But I mean, it seems like a pretty clear cut case that, you know, he hung himself in his bathroom. And during the show, and this is like one of the weird things, you can actually go watch the show that he just played hours before he killed himself. And at some point he says, you know, I feel really bad for the next city, which is maybe a clue that he kind of had this in mind too. So,
yeah.
I mean, after he died, I actually went back and I started reading some of the stories about him talking about Kurt Cobain's death, Kurt Cobain's suicide. And the thing that he kept coming back to wasn't that he was necessarily sad or that suicide's never the way out. It was like he kind of sympathized with him. He's like, yeah, this is a hard business, and it, you know, tends to grind people down. And this was like years and years ago. So I don't know. Maybe it'd been something that he'd been thinking about for a long time. But, you know, for those not in the know, obviously he was the lead singer of Soundgarden. And later Audioslave, which is just kind of an asterisk, I think, on his career. But he was mostly known, you know, for just his incredible voice. I mean, it was just a fire hose of a voice where he just opened it up, and, you know, he could, you know, his scream, he could take it down and kind of be tender. And, you know, as I always say, when we talk about singers, is when you're a fan of kind of independent music, and Soundgarden eventually became not independent, of course, they weren't a huge band, but, you know, you make a lot of trade-offs in that. You listen to a lot of singers that may not be as great, but he was one of the best, you know, rock singers, I think, that we've ever had. He's kind of our generation's Robert Plant, I guess you would say, because he just had that scream, he had that howl, and it was just such a recognizable voice. And what's funny, at the time, you know, when they first got popular, and they are, you know, pigeonholed in this whole grunge era thing, but, I mean, Soundgarden and Chris Cornell specifically, I mean, he would have been a rock star in the 60s, the 70s, you know. If he were around in the 1920s, he would have invented rock music, because that's just who he was. I mean, he kind of transcended the whole idea of that, you know, he's a genre-specific grunge guy. And when Soundgarden first came out, they were kind of dismissed as rip, like Black Sabbath ripoffs, which I think is interesting now, the fact that Ozzy Osbourne has actually outlived Chris Cornell, which is just amazing to me. In fact, I saw a video where Dave Grohl is talking about the song Black Hole Sun from Soundgarden, and saying that was the first time he had ever heard someone like successfully meld Black Sabbath with the Beatles, like those types of music coming together. And so, you know, that's kind of what he brought. And I think the thing that I remember most about him is that you never really heard anything about him. He was kind of a mystery. I mean, you had Kurt Cobain, who was troubled. You had, you know, Pearl Jam and Eddie Vedder, who was, you know, constantly out making news. But Chris Cornell seemed to be kind of a quiet guy, even on stage. I saw them a few times, and, you know, Soundgarden would walk on the stage, pick up their instruments, start playing music. There wasn't any banter. There wasn't any dancing. There wasn't any histrionics. They were just confident enough in themselves to stand up there and play the music. And I always thought that was admirable. I saw them in 1992, actually, in Milwaukee. They were playing with Blind Melon and Neil Young and Crazy Horse. And it was right after Chris Cornell had shaved his head. He was famous for having this long flowing hair when he was in the earlier days of Soundgarden. And I saw that, and I'm like, that looks awesome. So that very night, I went home and shaved my head too, and I looked like a giant thumb, whereas he looked awesome. And so it didn't work out for me. But, I mean, the thing that kind of, you know, distresses people who were fans is that it was also unexpected. And if there's a kind of a silver lining to all this, it's that on Twitter and other social media and places, I'm actually finding out people who I know who actually were big Soundgarden fans and who love Chris Cornell. And so in a way, you know, I've been talking to those people, not realizing that. And so now we have something to talk about. And so, I mean, if it's something that kind of brings people together, I suppose, you know, that's kind of a good thing. But, you know, what's, I think, most depressing about this is the fact that, you know, here's a guy who was universally loved. Everybody knew how talented he was, and yet somehow, you know, still committed suicide. And so, you know, it's depressing to know that there's somebody, that there are people out there that no matter, you know, what they earn or what the world gives to them, that they'll never be happy. And so I think it's probably a lesson for all of us to, you know, find happiness where we can. And if we can't, to find help. And if we know people that aren't, you know, try to get involved and help them out too. So, I think we have some songs queued up just to, as a primer, a Chris Cornell primer. So, the first song that I picked out was, Beyond the Wheel from the 1988 album, their first album, I believe, which is Ultra Mega OK. Yeah, so that was the example that I came up with just to kind of show off, you know, what he had going voice-wise, at least. So, but, I mean, you could definitely hear the Sabbath influence. And, you know, for all the things people say about the grunge era, every grunge band really kind of had their own thing. You know, Nirvana was kind of more of a, like a Pixies type of, you know, power punk type of thing. Soundgarden had the Sabbath thing going on. Pearl Jam was kind of more of a 70s era rock band type of thing. So, but yeah, I mean, he had a voice that, that can't be replicated.
Yeah. I hadn't heard that song and
no, me either.
You know,
I heard the hits.
It's more, yeah, that's more just straight up heavy metal than I was imagining their earlier stuff would have been. But,
yeah. And it was later. So Ultra Mega, Bad Motor Finger came out, and that was kind of their big breakthrough. And then Super Unknown came out, which had their first big hit, which is Black Hole Sun, and some other songs. That's kind of when they really hit it big. And, you know, so their last album, which was called Down on the Upside, I didn't really like that much at the time when it came out, but now that he's gone, I've gone back and listened to it, and retroactively kind of appreciated it more, which kind of happens now that you know that there's never going to be any more. So I think sadly, as is the case with many celebrity deaths, people go back and appreciate things a little bit more when they're gone.
Right.
Yeah. They were kind of bigger than I realized. I knew that Black Hole Sun was a pretty big hit, and I didn't really comprehend how big they were overall.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about them until, you know, after hearing Nirvana and then Pearl Jam. So,
yeah, what's funny
like
is
a lot of people that didn't know anything about him, they would have just lumped him in, like, yeah, more of that kind of stuff.
But, yeah, like in the wake of his death, what's funny is a lot of people are going online saying, "Oh, you got to listen to this Chris Cornell live acoustic performance of Billie Jean," or "You got to listen to this Chris Cornell covering Nothing Compares to You by Prince," and all this stuff. It's like, well, you know, he did write his own songs, and they're actually really good. So if you're not You know, if you're not steeped in Soundgarden, I would say go back, listen to Ultra Mega OK or Louder Than Love or Bad Motor Finger, Screaming Life was another one. You know, kind of the stuff before they got big is I think, their best stuff. So go check it out. It's all online somewhere.
Did you want to play one more track? You had another one queued up.
This was always one of my... I went horse many times driving cross country, listening to this song, trying to replicate Chris Cornell's voice. So yes, this is from Bad Motor Finger. This is Slaves and Bulldozers.
You know, because we're not doing a Facebook Live thing here, you just have to imagine Chris doing some lip syncing there.
Yeah, which, I thought
he was doing it, not the whole time, but on a
I thought when
of,
we got to 100 followers that Chris was going to sing that and post it on the internet.
Well, he was going to do well.
It's funny, when I'm alone in my car, I sound perfect when I sing that.
Right.
Yeah, if I did it right now, it probably wouldn't.
You know what?
It'd scare the children.
There's a good chance that. Well, we've talked, first of all, about Will's whiskey pours, right? Healthy. After Chris gets done with that, we might be able to talk him into
singing the Chris Cornell. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. This.
I'm looking at this. I'm really.
I did give you guys kind
of
a
podcast.
I gave you guys a healthy pour tonight. I had like, I don't know, it was less than half a bottle, but then we had to divide it three ways. I'm just like, wow, I'm just gonna. Just pour it all.
Which is ironic.
Yeah.
Which is ironic because this healthy pour is actually going to kill me.
Right. Yeah. If somebody came in, they'd be like, oh, these big, tall glasses of iced tea. That's what it looks like.
Seriously. Well, so, yeah. We'll see if these guys can get through it.
Anyway, so Chris Cornell, he will be missed. An American original. Yep. And it's still very sad.
Yep. All right. Well, we got a whole bunch of bands to talk about. Maybe we can get through them, but, you know, sometimes you just got to strive for the greater than $0 worth, right?
Right.
So let's start with Slow Dive. You guys remember Slow Dive?
Well.
1989 to 1995 was like their period.
I only learned about them after I got into Mojave 3,
oh,
which
yeah.
I like a lot.
Yeah. And I got into Mojave 3, too. So Neil Halstead is the main songwriter. Rachel Goswell is the other founding member, and they are from Reading, England, probably next door to Craig, I would assume, pretty much.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. No, it's actually west of London, but only like a 25-minute train ride west of London.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good music journalism by me, isn't it?
That is good.
Yep. So Slow Dive, this is kind of cool. They existed for that half a decade, basically. And then in, I think, 2014, they decided to get back together and play some shows. And then they really took their time because now it's, you know, at least 2, maybe 3 years since they reformed. Now they've put out an album. And I think it shows that they took their time and put out a solid album. I'll talk about it more. Maybe we'll all talk about it more. But let's play a song first. I'm going to start with track 3, which is called Don't Know Why.
Okay, so I have to admit that I haven't listened to this, but if there were an iPhone app that existed that could reach into your brain,
yeah,
extract the contents of your brain and yep, put it down into a band,
yeah,
that would be this band.
I was thinking, that's like Chris is going to say, this is so predictable that I would like this. Right. It's like it's called dream pop, right? That's what you're saying. Yeah, it is. It's right up my
and
alley.
And therefore, it was predictable that I was going to say that it was predictable.
Yeah, exactly.
Gosh, we're all like in this loop. This is like Inception. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
A dream within a dream.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I liked it too. And I didn't catch them the first time around, but I did really like this album. It's kind of, I was looking for the word to describe it, and the word was escaping me. And I was like, is it lingorous? No. Lugubrious? No. Laconic?
Tanking?
No. And I never quite got what it is.
Cantankerous?
No, it started with an L. Maybe languorous.
Laconic?
Closest.
Did you already say laconic?
Yeah, I did, and that didn't quite do it. Neither did lugubrious.
So, do you have a pick, Barrett?
I'm going to choose one called Everyone Knows.
slow dive.
So I went on thesaurus.com trying to figure out what this word is. I think languorous comes the closest, but all the synonyms they give for that are just terrible ones to apply to music, like limp, listless, like weak, you know.
That would be insulting.
But some of them would be apt. Unhurried. That certainly applies.
Sure.
But anyway, phlegmatic.
So they had, I believe, 3 albums in their first phase. And I'm pretty sure I had 2 of them and really loved about half of each album. So I thought they had their moments, but they never put together like a whole album that was really good, which leads me to my conclusion that this is their best album.
Wow.
Wow.
22 years after their previous most recent album, it's their best album, which is pretty damn good accomplishment.
That's because they've been working on it for 22 years.
Yeah.
22 years.
Yeah.
That'd be like if the Beatles in 1992 got back together again.
Made their best album?
Yeah. Can you imagine? Wow, that'd be pretty amazing.
Well, the rest of their albums, only half the album is good. So.
That's right. I forgot. That's according to our host, Will. They're pretty spotty, but they have some okay songs on there.
Grant's going to have to speak to this later, but he was just telling me this week that there's an album that he was listening to, and he said, I guess I must like the Beatles. And I said, really? And he said, because I really like this album that I've been listening to, and people compare it to the Beatles. So maybe I actually like the Beatles.
Do you know what it was?
That's what he said. We have to save that for later.
Okay.
It's an album with a future release that will have to be featured on the podcast, because I heard a little bit of it too, but we got to keep the listeners guessing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Let's play one more piece of the Slow Dive album. This is a
Paul McCartney,
a quieter one.
It's a weird way to get into the Beatles.
It is. Indirect.
There's this band, and people say they sound like the Beatles. I should check these Beatles out.
Yeah, wow.
Well, he's still skeptical, but it was a little bit of an opening, I think. All right, let's play Sugar for the Pill.
That's good. You know, if you take the instrumentation of that away and put in pedal steel, that just sounds like a Mojave 3 song.
Right. And that's one thing that was so interesting about Mojave 3. It's because after that 6 years of Slow Dive, they just said, we're just going to ditch all the effects pedals, play some acoustics, throw a little Americana vibe in there. But it's really interesting how they sound kind of similar.
Right.
But yet so different in terms of the overall sound. So, yeah, cool. Check it out. Chris brought with him a couple of bands today.
I did. They're in my car.
He left them out in the car because
hold on, I'll go get them.
They may have made an album that was podcast worthy, but they haven't quite reached the stature of being like in the studio. So Chris made him wait in the car.
Chris, absolutely. Did you leave your keys in the car? Because bands and the car are gone. I looked out the window.
Oh, they got away with my car.
Yeah. We can still talk about them, though.
It's too bad. Well, yeah. So what do we got? Who are we talking about
now? We got that one.
Okay.
And we got that one. So who do you want to start with?
Let's start with the first one.
Charlie Bliss.
Yes. This is a New York band of youngsters who I believe have just finished college, as a matter of fact. And I feel like a very old man, given the fact that they're all in their early 20s, and yet I still find this album delightful. Many critics have said this is kind of a throwback to 90s era power pop, and that is certainly the case. Although, if female-led power pop bands are your thing, there's certainly no shortage of those out in the marketplace these days. My year-end list 2 years ago probably had 8 of them, from Bleached or, you know, Best Coast or Dum Dum Girls or, you know, any number of them. So I don't think this is anything groundbreaking as of right now, but, you know, I'm a guy who likes hooks and it's full of them. So let me start with a song called Black Hole.
She's got her toe in the cornhole.
Charlie Bliss.
So part of being able to enjoy this band is being accepting of her singing like kind of a little baby.
Yes.
She does have a very young girl baby voice, which is certainly a style. And, you know, I like it. Although, you know, after repeated listens, I think maybe it kind of the effect wears off a little bit. But
what do you think about the Kim Deal comparison? I think she's like a higher-pitched Kim Deal a little bit.
Yeah, I suppose.
I mean, wouldn't have come up with it myself, but that after I read 2 articles that compared her to Kim Deal, I thought, yeah, I sort of get that.
Well, you can hear Kim Deal singing a song like this, certainly.
Yeah. I mean, it's formulaic, but it's a hell of a formula.
Right.
Yeah, like that was a catchy one for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's really catchy. It's got big hooks. As Michael Bolton would say in the Lonely Island video, he's got a big, sexy hook.
He He just quoted Michael Bolton.
What the hell
Bolton.
Are you talking about?
Yeah. You don't know this, the Captain Jack Sparrow song?
I don't know that either.
With no. Lonely Island, where Michael Bolton sings the song.
All the words.
And it's all about Captain Jack Sparrow. Oh, never mind.
I know what all the words that you said mean, but I put them together. Yeah,
no. Go online.
And it doesn't make any sense.
Go on YouTube, search for Michael Bolton, Captain Jack Sparrow. And he'll talk about his big sexy hook, which is it's a comedy thing. It's funny.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway,
the Charlie
like
Bliss
a
album
hook hand type thing. Is that like a
well,
pirate?
No, you just okay. brought new meaning to that video for me. Maybe that's what he's talking
all right,
about.
I'll have to check that out.
I was about to tell you that the album is called Guppy.
Yes.
Guppy. And I'm going to pick a song that's catchier than the one Chris picked.
Impossible.
Yeah.
Impossible.
Good
oh, yeah?
Luck.
Let's let the listeners decide who wins this one. The correct pick is track 2, Westermark.
As far as which one is hookier,
oh, Bert's going to resolve
catchier,
it.
Oh, wow.
Who
well,
wins?
Well, actually, I'm not. I'm going to call it a tie.
Oh. I was all ready to be declared the winner. No, that I one think, had probably even more of a like a Pixies and Breeders vibe to it, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I thought so.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I had a hard time with her voice. I think if you saw them live, some of the affectation that she throws in there would disappear, you know? She would just be doing the thing live and kind of unselfconscious about it. I think it would sound more palatable to me, but
maybe.
I had a hard time getting over her voice. I never really did. I didn't. I didn't particularly like it.
Yes, but you're one of the few people that I have recommended this album to that has had a problem with that, so you're not alone.
But you know I like some you remember Altered Images?
Oh yeah, that's
Claire Grogan.
Yeah,
that is the gold standard for cutesy pie baby voices. I like that.
You like that?
No,
I don't know why.
A couple of years ago there was that album that I loved called Soak, and you said the same thing about it, like you
oh,
were
wait.
Kind of off.
She's the one that's saying it like Bloyd.
She said Bloyd. Yeah,
yeah, okay.
But and you thought she's it sounded
like
a sounded like a little girl was singing, kind of, and you it was yeah. you was off putting to you, or maybe it was just knowing that she was like 15 or 16 or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
you know,
Chris.
Well,
yes,
make another pick.
You know, when you dig into this album a little bit more, aside from just kind of her voice and other stuff, I her lyrics actually kind of have a little bite to them. If you know, when you start listening to what she's actually saying, it's almost kind of like, you know, the travails of dating and being a millennial and things like that. It's almost kind of like a news report on millennial life. And so one of the songs that I think is lyrically most interesting to me, and also very catchy, is a song about the The Fear of Having to One Day Work at Dairy Queen, which is a song appropriately called DQ.
I loved when your dog died. It is cruel, but it's true. Take me back, kiss my soft side. Does he love me most now that his dog is toast? Ooh. I'm stupid fighting with this guy. Colossal and he's got in my hair tie. Best is when he stays with me all night. All my big fights offside. Blocked.
Yep.
I'm 4 years above 16. I bounced so high, I peed the trampoline.
Wow.
Deep, insightful.
Well, as far as the lyrics, well, the sentiment about not wanting to work at Dairy Queen, and about the summer of 1981, my mom was to my sister, my twin sister and I, like, you guys maybe should think about getting a job, blah, blah, blah. Not interested in that at all. Maybe this is more like 82 or 3. The only place I would have considered was Dairy Queen, which was near our house, and it's like where all the cool kids, like the Catholic high school, where they would go after the football game across the street, was the Dairy Queen.
Were they making blizzards at that point, or was that a...
That was a pre-blizzard. That would have been more like, you know, you're giving out daily bars, your peanut buster parfaits.
That Buster bar was, I remember when that was new. That was like
the Buster bar? Is that different than the peanut buster parfait? I think the peanut buster parfait was like a Buster bar, like on steroids.
Yeah, something like
I
that.
I didn't. Can we edit that out? I hate it when people
call things on steroids.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like a Buster bar, like on PEDs. Performance enhancing drugs.
Yeah. There you go.
No, I was sound like a, listening to that song. I was thinking of all the times, like Dairy Queen seems to come up pretty often in in music. There's the Clem Snide song, of course, Dairy Queen.
Isn't there a, who am I thinking of?
I was just listening to something very...
Fountains of Wayne, maybe?
There might be. I was listening to something very recently that came out recently that also had a reference to Dairy Queen. So it seems to be a pretty common reference point for musicians, I think.
Maybe because Queen rhymes with a lot of stuff.
Yes, that's true.
You got to find a rhyme somewhere.
Trampoline in this case.
Yeah, there you go.
Queen, green, scene. Yeah. Whereas if you have like McDonald's.
Yeah, nothing rhymes with it. So nobody sings about McDonald's.
Channels?
Yeah.
Like nothing.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's why that might be.
Okay, I've got two tie-ins now to my next pick. So we're talking 90s alternative rock, right? So who better to represent that than Juliana Hatfield, right?
Yeah.
Now, she was more of the, I don't know, alternative maybe pop, not quite like hard rock, right? Not grunge or anything like
that. No, pre-grunge.
And then, you know, you're talking about lyrics.
She was right, like her best album, with Juliana Hatfield 3, was like 92, so it was kind of like right on. Okay. Well, she was in the Blake Babies before.
Yeah, but it wasn't grungy, really, right?
No, it was definitely not grunge, but it was kind of opened up the era to alternative music, which kind of also made Juliana Hatfield famous.
Yeah, but in that same way, then you could say like because everybody did a grunge album then. Remember, like, The Wedding Present did Sea yeah. Monsters, which was a grunge album.
And but it
R.E.M. wasn't, did a grunge album.
But don't you think The Wedding Present, it wasn't, like, out of character for them, was it?
I thought, if you go back and listen to Sea Monsters...
Maybe I just didn't...
It can't have happened that. Without what happened the couple of years before it.
Well, R.E.M. did that. Yeah, I remember that. So that's, everybody go back and listen to our epic R.E.M. album ranking podcast.
Yeah, we need
right?
to push those old episodes.
The R.E.M. special. So if you haven't heard that one, just search for Will's Band of the Week R.E.M. special. So a little self-promotion there.
Yes, so, Juliana Hatfield III's Become What You Are was like 92, 93. Right. One of my favorite albums
yeah,
of all time.
That was great. Yeah.
It would be interesting to go back and see like bands that we love, like the most influenced by the style at the time. Because I think you're right with R.E.M. Like their Monster album was kind of a reaction to the grunge era.
Right.
Yeah.
Think of like the great bands that kind of like tried to go with whatever was popular at the time.
When Neil Young put out the electronic album called Trans, right? Isn't that what it was called? It was, everybody thought it was absolutely terrible.
You've got a lot of people though that will defend that album.
I'm sure it has some merit to it.
I mean, that's a dumb thing to say because anybody will defend any
yeah.
piece of
yeah.
shit, but like
Chris Cornell put out, like, his third solo album was an electronica album, and it was awful.
Like, that doesn't seem like
universally panned.
Doesn't seem like it would fit his style.
Right. Yeah. So we've, yeah. you know, all the obituaries about him are going to skip that one.
I'm going to make a yeah. little programming note here and say that anything else I say from here on out, you have to remember that you've almost finished off this thing. So you got to take that into account.
Barrett is no longer responsible for any opinions he
gives.
That's
exactly what I'm saying.
So, have either of you listened to this Juliana Hatfield album?
I have not.
I listened to the first song.
And then gave up?
It's not that I gave up. I just, like, I wanted to hear a little bit yeah. of what it was about, and I didn't go back and listen to it again.
Okay.
I didn't bail on it. But.
So here's the quick 30-second recap. Donald Trump got elected. She got pissed, so she made an album. And she was really pissed at and about Donald Trump.
Ooh.
Now, normally, like, you see all these political anti-whatever albums, usually musically, they're just bad, right? Because they just put, you know, they're more concerned with what they want to write and what they want to say, right?
False. So, I challenge that.
Do you?
Maybe, I think, like, angst about politics, about, you know, war, about all that stuff, okay. that's, like, the golden era. That's when people, like, really
well,
get it
okay.
together and
but,
in the
60s right, and stuff. You don't have, but,
okay.
you don't have an album specifically about, like, Watergate.
I think maybe there is.
But if there was, it wouldn't be, it's not remembered.
See, well, since everything comes back to R.E.M., like, their Around the Sun album, I thought was... their most disappointing album because it was right after we had invaded Iraq.
Yeah, I remember
and
you
I'm
saying
like,
that in the past.
Oh my God, this is their wheelhouse. They could just crush this. And they
right.
made their worst album,
so,
which is disappointing. Anyway,
yeah.
please go on.
But I think what I really had in mind is like the tribute albums and the whole, remember the whole thing? It was like 40 songs in 40 days or whatever. They're all anti-Trump songs. And like none of the songs are any good. You know. So when I heard about this, I thought, okay, she's going to be pissed, and she's going to say a bunch of shit about Trump, and I'll probably agree with all of it, but the music won't be very good at all. But I was wrong, because somehow, I think she just got revitalized and inspired and wrote a whole bunch of good songs.
Yeah,
it's a surprisingly good album. So,
but how many of these songs were written before the election of Donald Trump?
Yeah, well,
she's just like kind of changed the lyrics.
She might have had them in... Yeah, she might have. although her output has been... you know, very inconsistent for quite a long time. Always like something good on just about every album she puts out, but pretty inconsistent. And this is a really solid album. It's called Pussycat. And sometime, do you know how, have you guys noticed this on, you guys have Apple phones. It's sometimes there's a...
Yes, we're millennials.
Sometimes there is a, they put the lyrics on.
Sure.
And, but it's like spotty because it seems like the stuff we listen to is like, it doesn't have the lyrics a lot of the time. But
right.
this, I was listening to this the other night. I went to bed and I just said, I'm going to listen to this Juliana Hatfield album. And up popped the lyrics. And I was like, I started reading them and I was like, this is even more scathing than I thought it was.
Does she do a Trump imitation?
No. No, but it's worth reading them because it's pretty scathing. I'm going to start with track 4, When You're a Star.
We'll be right back.
No, I listened. I didn't hear her say Donald Trump. Where are you getting that? I don't get that. How is that? Whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, I have two main points about that song.
All right.
First of all, the whole When You're a Star thing, which is what the song is called.
Yeah.
I just wrote a column about this, that phrase, him using that, like we all get distracted about, you know, the whole sexual aspect about, oh, you're a star, you can do whatever you want, you know, grab them by the whatever.
Right.
That we get distracted about the whole sexual aspect of it, but the whole you can do whatever you want when you're a star thing is really the key to understanding Donald Trump, that there is no right, there is no wrong, there's only negotiations, and, like, either his checkbook or his negotiating skills will get him out of anything.
It's not just with women, but...
So, Julianna Hatfield is right on that point. However... Yeah. It does kind of feel like listening to those lyrics that she's like, it's like a spoken word, like poetry slam type of thing. Like she's really on the nose with that. So yeah, yeah. It does sound like she kind of wrote that not for the art, but for the to make a point.
Yeah,
I guess I would say.
I'm not going to play the track Rhinoceros. But that's when you should look at the lyrics, because it's like, it's pretty good. Okay, the next track I'm going to play.
By the way, in terms of, like, Trump art, there's a movie on Amazon Prime that claims to be a pro-Trump comedy, and I can't remember the name of it, but it is absolutely amazing how bad it is.
What?
A pro-Trump comedy?
Okay, yes. It says, like, right in the description, this is a pro-Trump comedy. And it is, like, literally the worst thing that I've ever seen. So, come on,
wow.
Republicans. Get it together. Make some good art. Let's get on this.
All right. Let's play Touch You Again.
Yeah.
Yep.
Juliana Hatfield. So there, she's escaped the grasp of Donald Trump, apparently, in that song.
Right.
A lot of research just took place while that song was playing.
We were looking at the movie that he was bringing up.
Uh-huh.
And it is called Under...
Attention was divided.
Is Under Doges? Underdogs? Under D-O-G-E-S.
They spelled dogs wrong?
D-O-G, yes.
Under Doges.
Yes, and...
What does that mean?
Slate called it literally the worst movie we've ever seen, and that is 100% correct.
Oh, man. Wow.
Even more authoritative than Slate, it was GQ.
Oh.
Oh, man.
They called it that.
It doesn't get more authoritative than that.
No. They write about...
Right. The magazine of record.
Fashion, movies, gadgets. You know, they're kind of the authority on all those things.
All right. Well, you guys, if you need to do some more research, go ahead. But I'm going to play one more song for the listeners.
Wow.
So I think she gets kind of worn out by slamming Trump. So at a certain point, she just gets kind of resigned and she's just sad. So she wrote this song called Sunny Somewhere.
The acceptance phase.
Right. That's Juliana Hatfield.
So that is in the vein of an artist who I think we all like. I like a lot, Jeremy Messersmith, who recently came out with an album which he entitled 11 Obscenely Optimistic Songs for Ukulele, which is clearly a reaction to the Trump era where everything is terrible, and so he wrote a bunch of songs like called Everybody Gets a Kitten, Everything is Magical, You Belong There with the Stars, all this stuff. So he went out and wrote an obscenely positive album of ukulele songs to make people feel better about the Donald Trump era. So I think that's what Juliana Hatfield was probably doing with that song.
Yeah.
Hmm.
All right.
Is the album by Jeremy Messersmith good or just interesting?
It is good. I would listen to it, although... He is sort of losing his mind now, I think, because he wants his name spelled with lowercase J and lowercase M.
It's always a red flag when they go to the lowercase.
He's like starting to lose touch with reality, I think, a little bit, and whether that the music is still good enough to overcome kind of him losing his mind is still a question.
Yeah, he seems like an artist that needs to have some kind of momentum, something to get him a little bit more, you know, out there.
Yeah.
Right?
No,
like anybody else. But if it feels like a bazillion, you know, everybody in their garage or whatever. But it felt like he was kind of on the verge about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
When we saw him,
just kind of lost a little momentum.
The Reluctant Graveyard is one of my favorite albums of the last 10 years or so.
Yeah. Yeah. He said some great stuff.
Great.
Yep. All right. Now, I'm going to boldly declare the listeners already have their $0 worth, but Chris brought even more with him.
Yeah.
And this is if you want to have just a fun band, right? Like, you can't just be serious and listen to this band.
But that's right? Not all.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this next band is White Reaper, which is on the vanguard of bringing rock back to everyone. Their first EP came out in 2014. I think it was appropriately called White Reaper. Their first real album was called White Reaper Does It Again. And then this album is called The World's Best American Band.
It's a great title.
Which I think... I think they're all ironic titles, but I think they're really fun, and they have a good sense of humor. And so, so they're a rock band from Louisville, Kentucky. And, you know, the hotbed of music, Louisville, Kentucky, of rock. And they play these huge arena-ready rock songs with huge hooks. And you can see them playing, like, you know, Kiss songs in a huge stadium. When they're this little band from Louisville. So I would go ahead and recommend playing the first song, and I would recommend The Stack.
If someone was like, what is this genre you call power pop? What's an example of that? You could play this. I think this would be, right?
It's kind of,
it's like Cheap Trick.
Yeah, kind of. I kind of admire the sort of brashness of it, right? You can just picture the guy just out there. Kind of, I thought of Foxygen. It's the genre's a little different, but it's kind of like, here we are.
Yeah.
Pay attention to us. In a fun way, and it's
fair play to you, as the
as the Brits would say, fair play. Barrett's asking the questions.
How do you describe what you've selected,
Joseph, for a reason? Well, I would describe it as arena rock, and it's funny that it's just this little band that plays these huge
specifically Budokan arena in Japan.
That's a little on the nose, but yes, that's exactly what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. No, they're great. I mean, you think about like a band, you know, in 1978 or something. If this album had come out then,
yeah,
you wouldn't even blink an eye. You'd say, "Hey, this is a great retro album."
Right.
And the fact that they have a sense of humor about the whole thing, I think, is great too. And the songs all back it up. The songs are all good.
How many people? I'm gonna say something, and you're gonna tell me how many people will get this reference. I want you to want me.
Yeah.
How many people got that? I think
we have a lot of older listeners.
Yeah, probably like 38% of the listeners, maybe
more than
over 50. Yeah, maybe over 50.
Yeah, I think
you can just see him like when he says that, like he's thinking, okay, not all of these people understand English, so I want to make it perfectly clear,
right?
Right, the way he says it. It's great.
All right, so you were bragging you had a song.
I really like track 3, Eagle Beach.
So we've mentioned arena rock, right? Yet when they played in Madison, they played the smallest.
They played the frequency.
They played the frequency.
Right?
Yeah.
To play.
Right.
Did you go to that, Chris?
I did not.
It was on a Monday.
Yeah, it was tough to get to.
Tough, yeah.
So I've missed. And this is another band that I think Beach Slang, who also played at the frequency, they're kind of the same thing in a way of like just out there, over the top. I see something in common between those three bands, this band, Beach Slang, and Foxygen.
When I first listened to them, I literally had nothing, I knew nothing about them. And I thought they kind of had like kind of the British, you know, snarly affectation. I thought they might actually be British.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of thinking like kind of the same attitude as like the Vaccines or something like that.
Right.
Which is a super poppy band.
Yep.
Right. But, you know, with, you know, big hooks and stuff. So. But no, Louisville, Kentucky, home of Muhammad Ali and White Reaper.
Yep.
As it will forever be known.
Isn't that where Slint is from, too?
I don't know.
I think so. And like,
there aren't that many bands from there, although, isn't there some Southern Rock 38 Special type band from there? I can't think of who that would be.
I don't know.
It all comes back to 38 Special.
Yeah, it does. Chris, do you have one more pick?
I do. Let's play the song after the song that I picked, which is Party Next Door.
Baby,
That's White Reaper.
I mean, how can you go wrong with that?
I think the humor saves it. You know, if I perceived it as serious, I would hate it. But once you bring that humor in, then it's fun and cool.
Yeah, I liked it. I didn't listen to it a ton. I got sidetracked with other stuff, but
not as overtly humorous as like The Darkness, which is
no
like tongue in cheek, asking you to play along with the same joke album after album.
Right, like this has some humor, but The Darkness is just meant to be just straight on funny.
Right.
Yeah. By the way, other bands, Slint is from Louisville. Okay. My Morning Jacket.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see.
And then a lot of slowcore stuff like that's what Rodan I had in mind. And you know, King Kong, and they have all these bands that kind of, you know.
So they're like
eventually a lot of these guys moved to Chicago. Like Will Oldham was in yeah.
So, you know, in a subtle way, I just compared
like the Eau Claire of the South.
I just compared My Morning Jacket to 38 Special.
Wow.
But there's a little bit there, right?
Sure, yeah.
A little bit.
Will Oldham's right. brother shot the cover for Slint's Spiderland, where they're all in the lake there. Mm.
That's a
fun factoid.
That's worth a quarter right now, right?
There's a quarter.
Yeah.
Maybe you should... Oh, wait, no, it can be more than zero. Okay, never mind. I thought I gave too much.
Yeah.
We can give them, but... As much as we want, we just have to get up to nothing.
It's getting dangerous because we might be giving them a little bit too much this week.
Well, on average, it's worth about zero.
Yeah, I guess so.
I have a really before we go, I have a real quick bit of music news, and that is I went to go see Laura Marling.
That's a live report.
Right. Live report.
Yeah, live report.
And it was...
We're doing the segments out of order.
And it was great. And that's all I will say about it.
I saw a photo from the show. Looked like they had good lighting.
Was the photo from my Instagram account, or?
I think it was from. Was it at the Majestic?
It was at the Majestic. Yeah, I think
the Majestic posted. It probably wasn't as good as your photo, but
no, definitely not.
Yeah,
I was right up front. She played she's got like the first four songs from her "I Am an Eagle" album that she kind of plays as a kind of a when you string songs together,
a medley.
Yes, she's got that medley, and it was amazing. She played it. She played it solo, and it was very good. So
nice.
I would say if you get the chance to go see Laura Marling, go do it.
All right.
That was.
Did you see that Boston is going to play at Reese Stevens Field?
I did see that.
There's just something funny about that, right?
Yeah. Well, you saw them at. Wait, did you see them at Titan Stadium in Oshkosh?
No, I saw them in Milwaukee.
Oh, in Milwaukee.
The Mecca.
Who did you see at Titan Stadium?
Foghat. It was Foghat, REO Speedwagon, and Head East. That was my first concert I ever went to. I was 13.
Wow.
Yeah.
I should also mention that here in Madison, Wisconsin, we have the world's largest Bratwurst Festival.
Yeah.
That's right.
Where we celebrate encased meats. Is a very Wisconsin thing to do. Two of the bands playing there are George Clinton and the P-Funk All-Stars are playing there.
Really?
Yes, as are Queensryche.
Queensryche, really?
Yes.
Wow.
What a weird thing to have at Bratfest.
And Queensryche was the Seattle band before there was a Seattle scene. They were kind of the hair metal band from Seattle.
Are they the band with the, I'm going to hit you with some trivia. Are they the band with the song called Silent Lucidity?
Yes.
How do you know that? What are
it
you
just
talking about?
Seemed right.
Yeah.
Wow.
So for free $99, you can go see Queensryche here in Madison, Wisconsin.
Wow. People travel from all over for that.
I suppose
Do you think Nicholas can get here in time?
I don't know. He's got
on that ship.
He's got to get on that barge really soon.
Yeah,
I don't think he can.
Sunday, he's got until it's going next Sunday. It'll still be going.
Yeah,
I don't know when the band's playing.
In fairness, Hart and Jimi Hendrix, I would say, were probably the original Seattle bands. I shouldn't say that Queensryche was, but they were in the interim. Queensryche was,
and the Sonics.
Yeah, indeed.
Cool. All right, let's sign off. No more meaningless banter. Everything's got to count here. We'll talk to you again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
You can subscribe to the Will's Band of the Week podcast using iTunes or any other podcast app. All of our podcasts are also available directly on our webpage, willsband.net. You can contact us directly by email to willsband@yahoo.com, on our Facebook page, or on Twitter at Will's Band. The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you every week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.